Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, angels from above, you know you make my world light up. When I was down, when I was hurt, you came to lift me up. Life is a dream.
Blog Talk Radio Studios in the heart of Hudson County. Folks, you know it's always in Union City. Insider NJ probably brings to you Politically Direct, and I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, the 23rd of May here in 2019. I want to thank you all for tuning in here, and quite honestly, folks, without you, my loyal listening audience, this show would not be possible. So again, I want to thank you for listening from wherever and how are you going to be doing so throughout the Garden State and, of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. Now, you can write the show's inbox at any time, folks, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Also, check out the show on Instagram, folks, @politicallydirectnj. Also, hit me up on Instagram as well, @ProfessorFernandoUribe. A couple of new followers and likes this week, which I was really excited about, especially from Politicon, folks. If you know anything about Politicon, it is the political convention to go to every single year in California. And getting a follow from them initially, I was quite flattered. So to say the very least, I'm looking forward to seeing what the lineup will be for Politicon this year in 2019. Also, hit me up on Twitter, folks, @ProfessorFUribe. And, of course, for all you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. I do want to hear from you tonight at some point, ladies and gentlemen. Call me toll-free, 818-572-8032. Once again, 818-572-8032. Our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, don't forget to check out Insider NJ, ladies and gentlemen, by going to www.insidernj.com for the absolute best coverage of the political scene and the absolute best journalism anywhere in the state of New Jersey. You find it with Insider NJ. Don't forget to like them on Facebook, folks, and, of course, follow them on Twitter. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, or the staff. Again, folks, we have a great guest coming up in just a few moments. Make sure you don't go anywhere and stay right where you are. Again, toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. Our toll-free number, again, brought to you by Insider NJ. The best journalism, once again, folks, start and end your day with Insider NJ. Well, folks, right before I get to my guest tonight, I started thinking about, you know, my Cuban heritage, and I started thinking about a local organization here in Hudson County that, quite frankly, while they're doing good work, they also did themselves a disservice. And that is the subject of my first shot. Now, folks, let me put this in the context here. My mom is Cuban, my aunt is Cuban, and my 100-year-old grandmother is also Cuban. God willing, she'll be 101 years old next month. And one of the things that took place this week here in Hudson County was a very, very worthwhile event at the Chart House in Weehawken and right along the water. So if you've ever been there, it's just a beautiful restaurant, excellent service. You don't definitely want to, you know, if you haven't gone there, make it a point to make a reservation, celebrate an anniversary, a birthday, anything. The Chart House definitely takes care of you. And this week, the Cuban American Alliance for Leadership and Education hosted their second annual foundation gala. Now, I couldn't have attended because I was hosting my Hudson County podcast, which I do every Wednesday night live at 9 p.m., which is Talking to Hudson on Blog Talk Radio. Again, you can check it out. But during the week, you know, I see my grandmother every day, and my grandmother is a very proud Cuban. And, you know, like a great Cuban grandmother, you know, she spoils me, is always invested and interested in what I'm doing, is always interested in finding out what I'm, you know, what projects I'm involved in. And one of the great things that she always asks me about is, hey, how's my podcast going? What guests do you have this week? What's going on locally? And you know what? My grandmother's 100 years old, but don't sleep on her. I mean, she's as sharp as a knife. Trust me when I tell you. I mean, she's not very mobile anymore, and who really is at 100 years old? But my grandmother is as sharp as a knife. Let me tell you, nothing gets past her. And I said to him, like, you know, Grandma, I was supposed to go to an event this week sponsored by CAIE, the Cuban American Alliance for Leadership and Education. And surprisingly, they were going to honor with the Jose Marti, I guess the Premio Marti, which basically exemplifies the qualities of Jose Marti, which are, you know, honor and integrity and nobility and leadership. And they were going to honor CNN chief White House correspondent Jim Acosta. And my grandmother, who's 100 years old, looked right at me and said, ¿Para qué le va a dar a ese imbécil un premio? Which, so I'm sort of translating here, and pretty much my grandma just said, why are they giving that imbecile an award, especially anything having to do with Jose Marti? Like, that guy's a clown. That guy's a joke. He doesn't exemplify any qualities of Jose Marti. And this is my grandmother, folks, telling me this. Okay? And I already know it because I have a deep dislike for Jim Acosta. I mean, I think he's pretty much a symptom of the typical national liberal mainstream media. I mean, he's intellectually dishonest at all times. He conducts himself like a child, quite honestly, as much as he can on television. And you know what? He's a journalist. I mean, his job is to report the news, not be the news. And when he's having tantrums on television, on CNN, and crying and complaining about how he's treated by the president of the United States, well, you know what, folks? You know what? Do your job correctly. Conduct yourself in a manner that, you know, resembles somewhat of like decorum and integrity. And if you do that, maybe the president of the United States won't ridicule you or won't ridicule the network that you're employed at. And folks, it's no coincidence that CNN is last in the ratings because they put on garbage content. And it starts with the garbage employees that they have. And look no further, folks, than Jim Acosta. And I just found it funny that someone like my grandmother and other people can easily figure this out. And now, again, let me be very clear. I'm a big fan of the Cuban American Alliance for Leadership and Education. I urge you to go to their website again. And if you have any disposable income and you're looking to donate something, do me a favor. Go to www.caale.org. They have a donate button right at the very top. Folks, again, let me be very clear. They are an outstanding and wonderful local nonprofit that works very hard to represent the Cuban American community and to also help high school students with providing scholarships for them as they try to attend the college of their choice. So they're doing great work. There's no question about it. But again, for all the great work they do every day, they did themselves an immense disservice, even honoring someone like Jim Acosta and putting even in the same breath as Jose Marti. And I think that's downright embarrassing. Now, in fairness, I have reached out to the executive director at the organization. We're trying to work out a slot for him to come on the program. Not because we want to talk about this. This is like really inconsequential. This is just sort of me having my own little personal beef and gripe about this specific gala. But overall, the organization does great things. And I'm very, you know, I'm looking forward to featuring them on not just only this podcast, folks, here on Politically Direct, but also on Talking to Hudson on Wednesday nights. Because they do deserve. They deserve the attention that they're getting for all the outstanding work that they do. But, you know, for future reference, and this goes, whoever made this decision, you need to do better in 2020 because you need to pick better candidates. Because if you want to honor someone that resembles Jose Marti, a Cuban patriot and icon, believe me, Jim Acosta from CNN doesn't exhibit any of the qualities that Jose Marti does. So I hope that in 2020, CAIE does better with their selection. And quite frankly, I hope they're listening. And that's tonight's first shot here, folks, on Politically Direct. All right, folks, 8:10 here on the East Coast. And it's, let me just make sure I log them in. Folks, it's 8:10 on the East Coast. And it's my pleasure to welcome to the program for the very first time. He is the esteemed assemblyman in the 40th Legislative District. For those of you that are not aware, that does make up municipalities in Bergen County, which include Allendale, Franklin Lake, Sohocus, Midland Park, Ridgewood, and a few others, also in Essex County. folks and as well as Morris County want to welcome to the program tonight the Assemblyman in the 40th Legislative District, the great Kevin Rooney. Assemblyman, welcome to Politically Direct, sir.
Thank you very much. Don't forget Passaic County. We don't want to leave them out.
Yes, that's right. My bad, Assemblyman. I'm sorry. My bad. Little Falls, Pompton Lakes, Toto, Wayne, and Woodland Park, sir. Definitely. I appreciate you.
Very good. Let me know. Thank you so much.
Now, can I call you Kevin? Is that okay? I mean, we're
absolutely
on the show here.
Absolutely.
Kevin, well, first and foremost, I want to thank you for coming on the program here. Quite frankly, I always enjoy having elected officials on the show because I like transparency. I like transparency from our elected officials. I had the pleasure of having your assembly running mate in the 40th, Mr. Christopher DePhillips, on a few weeks back. He was an absolute treat to have on the program. He was a wealth of information. And I pretty much, I'm glad you wanted to be on the show as well. So let's get right to it. Kevin, it's budget season. There's a lot going on in Trenton. There seems to be a Democratic civil war, which I'm sure for many Republicans and conservatives in New Jersey, they're sitting back with a bucket of popcorn enjoying all of this chaos and turbulence in the Democratic Party. But at the end of the day, Kevin, the budget needs to be, ratified, and it needs to be passed by both chambers of the legislature and signed by Governor Murphy, excuse me. And one of the things that was alarming to me today, Kevin, is hearing this language from the governor that he seems very willing to, not sign a budget if he doesn't get a millionaire's tax. I think that's
Yeah, he actually came out with a press release today that stated that. Yep.
Yeah, and you know what? If this is true, this is despicable to hold the budget ransom, which is constitutionally mandated in New Jersey because of a millionaire's tax. Even Democrats are going after him. What do you think, Kevin?
I think it goes further. What we're doing is actually holding the residents, the 9 million residents of New Jersey, hostage. If you recall, the last time the budget was held hostage was back in 2017, where there was a stalemate, which was caused by the Democrats, by the way, not Governor Christie at the time, and that lasted about 4 days. We didn't get out of Trenton until 1:45 in the morning on July 4th, and that wasn't fair to the residents of New Jersey. And I see the same thing happening now with this governor. And as I said, that's not fair to the residents of New Jersey. I just got back from a voting session. I've been down in Trenton all day today. And I will say that we accomplished nothing other than passing a piece of legislation on medical marijuana. Everything else was not intended to actually improve the well-being of our residents.
And you know what? And Kevin, that's disappointing because when we think about everything that goes into the state budget, and certainly, Democrats have such a stranglehold in terms of the majorities in both the state assembly and also in the states. I believe the numbers, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's 54-36 or 55-37.
No, it's 54-26. It's 54-26
okay.
In the assembly. And then on the Senate side, it's 26-14. There's 120 legislators that represent the 9 million folks, and the Democrats are at almost at supermajority levels.
Yeah, and you know what? And it's disappointing to me because – and I really want to get your thoughts on this because I know obviously as you and Chris are running for reelection in your districts this year – and I'll tell you something, Kevin. You and Chris, and I've been watching your careers. I've been watching – your legislation that you introduced and, how you stand up for your residents and your constituents in the 40th. Listen, they should be very grateful. Both of you guys do an excellent job. And I normally don't show any favoritism on this program. I normally don't like to show my cards, but, I've done my homework on both of you guys. And you guys do an outstanding job in your district when it comes to, addressing the needs of the 40th. But as we all know, in all 40 legislative districts, there are different issues for different populations and different times. And even with the state budget now, what are some things that you and Chris collectively are really advocating for that have to do with your constituents in the 40th?
Well, first off, thank you for what you said. Chris and I go back a long way. Chris and I ran for council together back in 2009. That's how we started building our friendship. And it started at the local level, where you got to make a difference by seeing people's eyes. When you represent 9 million folks, forget about just the District 40, you don't necessarily get to see the face of the people that you're touching. So we served at a local level, both as mayors. I served three times as mayor, Chris is once. And we were able to garner the experience necessary to go down to Trenton. With respect to the budget, you know, when we vote on things, it's for all 9 million folks. And the real tragedy that's going on in the state of New Jersey is the affordability crisis. You know, I was fortunate to be blessed by parents that were able to reap the benefits of what their parents and ultimately their grandparents gave them. And what I mean by that was I was born in Paterson, New Jersey at St. Joe's Hospital. I came from a background of Italian and Irish descendants. My Irish side came from Paterson. My grandmother was a school teacher for 40 years. That was the Irish side. On the Italian side, carpenters, builders from Passaic, New Jersey. And they afforded my parents the opportunity to grow and then give that same opportunity to myself. I'm very concerned about the opportunities that, you know, I want to afford to my children. I'm a father of four. I'm a grandfather currently of two, one more on the way this September. And I don't see those same opportunities for our children that our grandparents gave to my parents. And that's the real tragedy. You know, seniors are leaving in mass. They're not able to stay and watch their children grow and see their grandchildren because they can't afford to live in the state of New Jersey. Millennials coming out of college don't have the opportunities. They can't afford homes. They can't find jobs. As I said, I'm a father of four. I have three of my children living with us, my wife and myself, along with my son-in-law and grandchildren, because right now it's difficult in the state, and it shouldn't be. We should be effectuating change for our residents in a positive way. You know, since the other side took over in 2001, there's been over 135 new taxes. With this administration, 22 new taxes. We
that's
can't
outrageous.
Afford that in this state. It's outrageous. And, you know, when we talk about out-migration, they have a disbelief. You know, I asked the treasurer at a budget hearing a couple weeks ago about the out-migration issue, and she said it's non-existent. Well, I got to tell you, you know, when I travel through our district and throughout the rest of the state, I see houses for sale at an alarming rate. When I speak to realtors, they're telling me that there are more and more houses for sale that can't be sold. There's more foreclosures. And that's not the New Jersey that I grew up in. You know, and it's unfortunate that that's the case. And we need to improve that. And so when you look at the budget, when Governor Christie was in his last term, it was I'm going to round the numbers up, all right? So it was a $34 billion budget under his last term. And we shut the government down. Governor Murphy, under his first year, went to a $37 billion budget, right? This year, we're talking about $39 billion. That's insane. We cannot afford it. It's not sustainable, and we need to change that.
You know what, Kevin, you're absolutely right. And, folks, if you're just joining us right now, it's 8:18 on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. It's my pleasure to have on here the esteemed assemblyman from the 40th Legislative District here in New Jersey, the great Kevin Rooney, joins us on Politically Direct. Kevin, there's a lot to unpack there in that narrative, and I'm glad you put up some of those stats in terms of the outward migration. And it sort of brings me back to a point I mentioned with Chris when he was on a few weeks ago. And it was interesting to me, Kevin, I know that last November, you know, if you remember, you know, obviously the congressional races, obviously all but one this congressional district in New Jersey went blue in New Jersey. Certainly Democrats came in here with a blue tsunami and took over the state and took over districts that, quite frankly, have been controlled by Republicans for some time. And that seems to happen every midterm cycle. It's nothing new. But you know what was really infuriating to me? When I would hear, I think, campaign slogans or platforms from people running for Congress that were Democrats in New Jersey that would have the audacity to say, you know, we're running because we want to make New Jersey affordable. It's been unaffordable for far too long, and we need to do something about it. Kevin, you know what really ticks me off about that disingenuous statement? That, you know what, the fact that New Jersey is unaffordable, this predates Donald Trump. This predates Barack Obama. Okay, I think even predates George W. Bush. The problem is not Washington, Kevin. And here's a newsflash for my listeners tonight. The problem has been Trenton. And to the point you just made earlier, since 2001, we're approaching almost two decades of control by one party, because they're the ones running the books. They're the ones when it comes to the spending in New Jersey. And it's been Democrats. And I don't understand for the life of me how people don't see that, or it's not
absolutely, you know,
because it drives me crazy, Kevin.
It's an interesting fact that you brought up. And, you know, and think about it this way. So let's just break it down a little bit. You know, with the new administration under Governor Murphy, if I ran when I was running for council in the town where I live, if I ran on a platform to raise your taxes, I would have been run out on a rail. This governor ran on a $1.6 billion tax increase agenda, and he was elected in the state of New Jersey.
He told you and so. He told you he was going to raise your taxes.
He told us that he was going to deliver. And he told us two things. He was going to deliver huge tax increases to the residents of New Jersey, but he also told us that he was going to give free things away.
Oh.
And unfortunately, there's nothing in life that's free, you know. And people have bought into that platform, and now they're starting to see that the problems that come with a free agenda is, A, your taxes continue to go up, people cannot afford to live here, and you cannot afford to sit and enjoy the fruits of your hard labor by you know, putting the investment into your house that once was your lifetime investment and your security. We don't have that option anymore. And that's the unfortunate thing. Prices have dropped. There was a recent article in the Wall Street Journal about Greenwich, Connecticut, where that bubble has broke. And we're seeing that same trend happening here in New Jersey. We on the Republican side have been trying for a long period of time. I went into the legislature back in 2016. So I haven't been there all that long. But I will tell you that it's an eye-opening experience that, you know, the Democrats vote in lockstep in committees. They almost vote as if they're lambs or water buffalo following each other over the cliff, you know, sort of from the Lion King scene. You know, we need them to speak up and speak the truth that it's unaffordable to live here in New Jersey. People are leaving in a mass way, and it's not fair to our grandparents and their parents who gave us the lives that we all get to experience here. And ruin that for our grandchildren. And as I said, as a father and a grandfather, I really am troubled by that.
Well, one of the things that does so troubling, Kevin, about this budget, it seems that for whatever reason, now again, you can clarify for me today, and I think it's important for our listeners to really get a sense of how to compartmentalize this budget. But it seems like, you know, there's a suggestion about raising the gas tax once again. We've already heard about the millionaire's tax, and it seems like the legislature can't come to an agreement on what that is with the governor and where he wants to do. But are there any specific elements of the budget currently that you can discuss with our listeners that really kind of freaks you out, though? Like, is there any sort of spending that's being recommended? I know you mentioned that the budget is going up, I think, another $2 billion from 37 right. to 39, and that's outrageous. But is there anything within the language you've read thus far in budget committee meetings, anything there specifically you can share with us, right? That, again, maybe some stuff is confidential or not, but that you can tell our audience that, wow, Fernando, this is – A, B, and C really freaked me out, not just because it hurts my district, but it hurts New Jerseyans in general. Anything you can share with us tonight?
Yeah, I can. There's a couple things. Let's talk about this concept, and this is coming from the governor. So he has said numerous times that he's found about $200 million in cost savings through department – cutbacks, you know, changes, efficiencies. So let's put $200 million in the side for a second. He said that he has now found an additional $800 million in discussions with unions on their health care benefits, right, through negotiations of new contracts. That's about $1.1 billion in proposed savings. Now, if you were running a corporation or if you were running a municipality and you found that type of significant savings, you'd say, look, I can use that savings to offset other increases that I may have. Well, what this governor is saying is, look, I found $1.1 billion, but I'm going to add another $2 billion to that in spending. Not that, hey, guys, I found $1.1 billion, I'm going to send that back to the residents of New Jersey and reduce their taxes. He's had the ability to do that. He's had the ability to continue with the former administration's interest arbitration 2% cap. He's chose not to do that, and it's not a Democrat-Republican issue. It's a bipartisan issue where Democrat and Republican mayors have come to the governor and said, look, we need this piece of legislation to continue so that we can save the taxpayers of New Jersey millions of dollars. He's refused to do that. Instead, he has decided to move forward in a way to increase your taxes. He's put $60 million, round numbers, into the budget based on marijuana sales. Well, as we all know, that's not going to happen this year or next year at this point. So that's an inflated number. There are so many numbers in the budget that, you know, are just pulled from the thin air in a way to pay for his pet projects. And that's concerning to me as a resident, taxpayer, and as I said, a father and grandfather.
No, listen, and you raise valid concerns right there, and I'm with you. And I'm glad you brought up marijuana, Kevin, because it's interesting, you know, up here where I live in Hudson County, specifically where I live in my residency in Union City, is the 33rd Legislative District, you know, very, very different assembly people that we have here, not just party-wise, but ideologically. But it seems like the governor and the legislature, and I'm not putting this on you and Chris and the legislature per se, but I'm sort of saying that, you know, for the last year, it took almost a full calendar year to get the minimum wage issue sort of settled. And even with that, I know that Assembly Speaker Coughlin's plan seems to be the one that prevailed. And it seems like, you know, the small increments are coming. Obviously, there's an increase coming up now, July 1st, and then January 1st next year, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, you know, one of the disappointing things for New Jerseyans, I think, Kevin, is the fact that, that's great to raise the minimum wage, you know, in small increments, but the cost of living continues to skyrocket. Property values continue to skyrocket. Property taxes continue to increase. So I think it still sort of puts a lot of working class New Jerseyans in peril. But specifically now with marijuana, it seems like the governor and the legislature have been at this for another year. And it seems like it went nowhere. There was a committee vote that was tabled in both chambers, I believe, in March. And, you know, now obviously State Senate President Sweeney declared, I believe, last week that it's not going to be decided at all in 2019, and it might get pushed back to a ballot referendum in November 2020. Kevin, I don't have to tell you, November 2020 is going to be a very, very busy month for a lot of reasons, both at the national level and even at the state level. But do you think it's wise to push it back that far? Or was there a concern even among assemblymen and women, both Republicans and Democrats, that if it was put on a ballot referendum this year, A, would low turnout possibly hurt that referendum? Or B, did assembly people in New Jersey just not want that on the ballot? Like, at some point, you and Chris and everybody, right, all 80 assembly people would have to take a stand. Is that something that maybe Assembly Speaker Coughlin maybe kind of like, you know, helped you guys breathe a sigh of relief over? Or is it something that can still be done?
Well, there's a couple of questions you asked there. So let's start with the marijuana question. So I was part of the Senate and Assembly joint hearing on the marijuana legislation. That took place months ago. It was one of the largest committees ever convened to discuss a specific issue, and that was marijuana. And it was everything from the legalization of marijuana to medical to the expungement bills. So the folks that were in that room that day actually did take a stand by their vote. There were some abstentions, there were some yeses, there were some noes based on the different votes that we were required to cast. The expungement bill, when I originally heard it, was up to 1 ounce. Somewhere between the committee hearing and the final version of the bill on expungement, it went to 5 pounds. And
wow.
The 5 pounds then included, you know, expungement on opiates and heroin and cocaine, which I believe, based on my discussions with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, presented itself as a significant problem and concern. When you're talking about 5 pounds of marijuana, you know, that's not a 5 pound sugar container you buy at the ShopRite. You know,
no, that's a giant.
That's a giant bag.
Kevin.
You know.
Yeah, that's trafficking.
You know, it was ultimately changed to the current version of the expungement bill, which I heard in appropriations this past Monday, which went back to 2 ounces of marijuana, and it removes some of the other objections that I spoke about earlier. Even 2 ounces is a lot, and I think that presented itself as some concerns to both sides of the aisle, and that's why that bill, both those bills, were pulled from our agenda voting today. We only voted on medical marijuana, which I've been an advocate of since we discussed it, and we've had that discussion in appropriations. I've heard it now 3 times, including my vote today, which I voted yes on, based on the benefits, specifically with minors and cancer patients. So there was no votes on that bill today. With respect to legalization, you know, we heard from many, many folks on both sides of the aisle and on both sides of the issue during those committee hearings. My concerns really were related to a couple of things. One, law enforcement. Law enforcement's concern was they really do not have the ability right now to identify people that are under the influence with any type of accuracy, because testing, accurate testing, is not available to law enforcement. And so, you know, we need to protect our law enforcement officers, and that particular legislation. Go ahead,
Kevin. To be fair, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but aren't field sobriety tests still going to are you going to win in the end, though?
No, DRE officers are not going to win at the end. Many municipal judges throw that testimony out because, you know, you could have taken Sudafed or whatever it else, you know, any other type of antihistamine and present the same type of effects. And so many municipal court judges are troubled by the inability to have an accurate testing, which you do get with a DWI for alcohol. So the testing isn't available right now that accurately will present itself in court as true evidence. So there's a problem there, and we heard from law enforcement across the board on their concerns. That's one element of it. The second element that troubled me is the fact that, you know, the mixed message we're sending to our children. So today, this drug is illegal. Tomorrow, with one signature on a piece of paper, it goes from illegal and bad for you to good and okay. So we need to do a better messaging when and if we do legalize marijuana. And last but not least, if it's totally about social justice, then why are we putting a $42 tax on it?
Oh,
if it's
God,
totally
yes.
about social, if it's totally about social justice, you know, you can brew your own beer in your home, you can make your own wine by, you know, stomping your own grapes, right? You can actually have a small distillery in your home for your own consumption of gin or bourbon or whatever it may be. But it's going to be illegal for you to have your own plant in the backyard for your own consumption. So it's not about social justice. It's about a tax money grab. And that bothers me. You know, so again, if we're going to change the conversation, let's change it. You know, if it's totally about social justice, take away the tax. I don't want to see us drive the market still underground by putting a tax on. So, you know, that's some of the concerns that were raised in committee. It's some of the concerns that have been raised on both sides of the aisle. And that's why you're seeing this stall in the legislature because of these concerns. And there's many, many others. These are just the 3 big ones that, you know.
Oh, no, they definitely are, Kevin. And you know what? You raise a good point there about the taxation. And I've said this before. You know, listen, by day I'm a college professor. I deal with college students all the time. And I tell them consistently, I'm like, what motivation does a law-abiding citizen or anybody, right, have to purchase it legally if it's being taxed at $42 an ounce? They're better off just going to their local corner or back to the black market. So this is what drives me crazy about Governor Murphy and some of the legislators, especially in the state Senate, and even some in the assembly as well, because they're not thinking, I think, clearly or pragmatically. What is the purpose of taxing at such a high rate, like you mentioned, where people are just going to say, you know what, why should I spend this much money to buy it legally? I can just go to whoever in my local street corner, wherever I live, and get it much cheaper. Now, I understand that when you buy in the black market, there's a danger of contaminants and other things that could be dangerous. I get all that. But people are still going to do that, though, Kevin. And this is what drives me crazy, like you just mentioned right now, about this idea about taxation. And I really wanted to sort of get your thoughts on this because, and I've talked about this with other legislators, not just in the assembly. I've had state senators up in my other, in my local show in Hudson County on Wednesday nights. I had State Senator Brian Stack up here. And I have State Senator Senator Cunningham on in a couple of weeks to talk about this as well. But it just seems like, quite frankly, though, Kevin, there's a generational disconnect or a generational divide, whether it's among Democrats, because obviously they consume, you know, the majorities, but maybe even with some Republicans statewide. When it comes to marijuana, when it comes to the medicinal benefits of it, you know, today, again, I'm not sure if you're a big sports fan. I watch the sports talk shows every morning. But yesterday, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell came out with a committee report that they're just now looking to maybe explore medicinal marijuana. And I just find it so hypocritical when I see stuff like that, Kevin, because, you know, the NFL has no problem partnering with beer companies when we all know that medicine and science tells you that alcohol is infinitely more harmful than marijuana could ever be to you. But the NFL or other organizations or government still look at marijuana with this stigma or look at it with this sort of very negative connotation. Like, do you think the biggest hurdle perhaps is just this generational disconnect that exists among legislators statewide about marijuana?
You know, here's the thing. So I'm 59 and during the height of marijuana, you know, it was the 60s and 70s. You know, I was right in that time frame, right? You know, by the early 80s, it started to switch to other types of drugs that were available. You know, so I'm not quite sure that it's always generational in discussion. You know, yes, there's some, you know, more senior to me folks in the legislature. However, I think for me, it's more about, you know, why are we doing it? If it's specifically about money, let's be clear on it. And let's be honest that it's about money. Don't tell me it's about social justice if we're going to add a $42 per ounce tax. Now,
I agree with you. Yeah.
In that same token, it's the same. You know, token is probably the wrong word, but you know, there's also a 2% tax that a municipality can add to it, right? And there's a 3% tax if you have a dispensary in your town. So we're talking about significant revenue that the administration's trying to drive to local municipalities to embrace this, all in an effort to make money. And, you know, listen, there are many things that we can do in this state to cut our expenses without worrying about a revenue stream if it's about social justice. If we're talking about the benefits of marijuana from a medical perspective, I get it. If we're talking about the world has changed and we should look at marijuana in a different way, I'm willing to have that conversation. But don't introduce the tax end of it to me. My residents, you know, in my district, as well as the rest of the 39 districts in the state, are overtaxed. They shouldn't be paying these high taxes. You spoke about, you know, early on, you spoke about the minimum wage. Everyone deserves a living wage, especially in a high-tax state like New Jersey. But we didn't look at the ramifications. You know, I tried to introduce a piece of legislation on the floor when we were talking about, you know, increasing the minimum wage. I wanted to put in an economic trigger, which essentially would say if we had a recession, we needed to take a breath, take a deep breath, and look at where we are as a state and as a country and maybe put a hold on those increases because we couldn't afford them, both for residents that were buying products and, more importantly, the businesses employing people. And the Democrats, you know, in Trenton, essentially, if you introduce an amendment on the floor, you're politely told to sit back down. It's a great exercise for you. You work your thighs. You stand up, and you're politically correct in your position, but you're told politely to sit back down. So it's an exercise of futility, but it's our job to represent the folks. And, you know, we don't have that economic trigger. God forbid we hit a recession and we continue down this pathway, you know, folks are going to be hurting in a far worse way than they are today. You mentioned the gas tax. You know, just think about this, and a lot of folks haven't. The average gas station attendant makes between $9 and $10 an hour to pump your gas, right? And that's at the current prices on the pump. You know, think about when we hit this July 1st and it goes up to $10, January 1st at 11, your gas prices are going to go up not by pennies, not by, you know, 25 cents. They're going to go up by dollars because they cannot afford to pump your gas at those prices. That's a true problem that we're all going to face. You know, your bottle of water right now where you're held hostage at Newark Airport is going to go up. It's going to go up in a dramatic way. And these are all things that are unforeseen costs that, you know, we really haven't thought about.
It's really disappointing, Kevin. It really is. And I'm really glad that you're outlining this for us this evening. And we'll get back to some state stuff in a minute. I know time's valuable for me tonight with you, so I'm going to try to get as much as I can in tonight. Obviously, you're running for re-election this November. Obviously, there's a primary in June. Certainly, you know, you and Chris are running, in the primary, of course, and looking to, secure re-election this November in your district. I don't foresee a problem. You know, I'm pretty good at picking winners in elections, and, you and Chris are a pretty strong ticket, so I don't see any problems. I don't want to jinx you guys, but, you know, I think you guys got a, you know, you guys do a really good job in your district, so I know that your constituents are going to come out in droves to get you guys reelected in November. So, I want to wish you luck already with that in advance. But at the local level, you know, Kevin, and even going back to when you first maybe developed an epiphany for pursuing public office, and obviously I know both you and Chris are very proud Republicans, but, you know, where was that point in your life, whether it was in elementary school, high school, college, where, you know, higher education, where you just sat back and said, you know what, the party may not be perfect, but I exemplify or I really identify with these qualities about the Republican Party. What makes you such a devoted and dedicated Republican, Kevin, today in 2019?
So, you know, so my getting into politics happened this way. I got married to my wife, and her dad was heavily involved in politics, and more importantly, giving back to society. So I was working, you know, in excess of 80 plus hours a week in three different states in the job that I was in. And one night I came home, and in fact, my father-in-law, mother-in-law lived next door to me, so it was very close. And he said, "Look, do me a favor. I'm involved in town politics. I want you to go on the local zoning board as an alternate." And I said, "You know, Dad, I don't even know what that is." He goes, "Look, you know, I need you to do me a favor." So, as a good son-in-law, I went to the meeting that night, and I was sworn in as a full member, not an alternate. And I came home that night, and I said, "What did you do?" He started laughing. He goes, "I know you'll be good at it." I served on the town zoning board for 11 years. I worked my way up through the ranks, vice chair, and then ultimately chairman of the local zoning board. And you really get to understand, you know, residents' needs. You have to say no sometimes to your neighbors and friends when they're asking to build an addition or a change to their house, and it goes against the law. You can't say yes all the time. And so when you have to say no to, as I said, to a friend or a neighbor, you know, it starts to develop thick skin, but it also develops your character as a person that understands their needs, but also understands your responsibilities. So I spent 11 years there. I also served on the town Shade Tree Commission. And then I was asked to run for council. And that's where I met Chris. And, you know, we ran a very aggressive campaign that year. And we were elected to the town's council. And as I said, I served three times as mayor. Chris served once. And we developed our skill set there where we weren't Republicans, we weren't Democrats, we weren't independents, even though we had Republican by name. We were public servants who served Republican, Democrats, and independents the same way. You know, when someone comes in with a concern or a need, you don't ask what their party affiliation is. You ask, "How can I help you?" And I think that's the character that, you know, Chris and I possess. It's about helping our residents. And we took that philosophy to the legislature and said, you know, look, how can we help our residents in a bigger way? And, you know, we were approached, I was a sitting mayor at the time, we were approached by former Senator Kevin O'Toole, who said, "Look, I've known you guys for years, I've seen what you've done, and I think it's time for you both to move up. And how can you say no? It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity." We seized that opportunity, embraced it, And I ran for the open seat and was successful, and I went into the legislature in 2016. I actually resigned my mayor position 2 minutes before I was sworn in, because you can't, by statute, you know, have two positions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's clear that I should say that when Chris and I both were elected officials in our town, we were entitled to stipends, but we both chose not to, because we weren't there for the money. We were there to give back. And we did that with the clear thought that, you know, we're here as elected. And you keep hearing me say elected officials. We're not politicians. We're elected to do a job. And our philosophy is very simple. Leave the place better than when you got there. So do everything in your power to make it better than when you got there. You know, and if you're doing that, that's, you can sleep at night with a clear head. You can lay your head on the pillow at night and say, you know what? I made a difference today. So I represent, you know, 225,000 people in District 40, but I represent 9 million folks when I place a vote. A lot of my legislation is not about District 40. It's about 9 million folks and trying to make a difference in their lives and future generations' lives.
Kevin, that's commendable, and that's a really inspiring story. And for anyone listening tonight that's looking to get into public service, I hope you just listen to that narrative right now from Assemblyman Rooney, because let me tell you, I mean, that was an inspiring, recollection right now by you, Kevin, to really, I think, outline exactly, you know, how dedicated you are to your position, and not just, you know, again, as you mentioned, the constituents in the 40th, but all 9 million New Jerseyans, which, you know, include myself, and I'm grateful for that. Obviously, you know, being a Republican in New Jersey is tough, Kevin. It's been tough for some time. And when I have,
it is, but it can be fun. It can be fun, because
right now it's fun. Right now it's fun with the civil war we're seeing in New Jersey, for sure.
You know, but what we do is we're able to present a different part of the story. We can present the story that's reality, right? And that's the fun part about it. And like I said, you know, I talk about legislation that we look at, and it's about 9 million folks. You know, legislation that I develop comes from you, the people of the state. You know, it's not always about what I think is right or what my ideas are. It's about what your concerns and needs are. And I'll give you an example. I sat in on a joint legislative hearing back in 2017 about issues that were affecting the Passaic River Basin, about pollution that was caused by companies that were owned by Argentina, and how they basically bankrupt those companies, which essentially put the burden back on the taxpayers in New Jersey. And we heard about the dioxin that was in the river and how that same dioxin was being found in fish as far as south as Florida. And that didn't sit well with me, that how a country could shirk their responsibilities and put that burden back on my residents, number one. Number two, how those risks would kill my residents. You know, there was discussion and testimony by experts, and I'm not an expert in this field, that said, look, if you eat one crab caught in this river, you can die. You can get enough carcinogens in that to kill you. So that didn't sit well with me. So we reached out in a short period of time, and I'm talking 48 hours, to get 63 legislators to sign a letter, okay, with their names on it, that was hand-delivered by Vice President Pence at the time to President Macri of Argentina, saying, look, you need to live up to your obligations. The state of New Jersey right now is allowing over $20 million to be invested in their pension funds from you. It's not right. And we put together a piece of bipartisan legislation that first was passed by both houses and was vetoed by former Governor Christie, then was put up again by both houses, passed in both houses, which was CV'd, conditionally vetoed by this governor, because my legislators on both sides understood that we have a real problem. This governor right now is not understanding that. And we can't allow countries to shirk their responsibilities and put that burden back on the taxpayers. So that piece of legislation came from those messages that I heard from residents, from experts. And that's the important thing of what we do. You know, having, you know, a show like this, having people listen to the message, call into your legislators with ideas and concerns that you have, that you're seeing as residents, that you're experiencing, whether it be on the road or whether it be in your own home life. You know, that's how we can make a difference and help you. And as I said, that goes
back to being
elected to do a job. You know,
I believe in term limits.
You know, I believe in term limits. I believe in term limits at the federal level and at the state level. You know, it shouldn't be a lifetime position because you get tired at it, right?
Yes.
And I'm not here, you know, to do it forever. I'm here to do it to make a difference. And that I think, is the important measure for any elected official. They need to do it until they stop making a difference.
No, and you know what? And you certainly are, Kevin, and you certainly are. And, again, just hearing you tonight, I mean, it's inspiring and admirable. Just in the tone of your voice tonight and the content of your message here about how you feel about public office and really about, you know, dedication to your constituents. I mean, that's admirable. And the reason I ask about, you know, sort of your dedication as a Republican is, as I mentioned just a few seconds ago, you know, being a Republican in New Jersey is tough, Kevin. And the reason I say this is, and I said this to Chris, I said this to Assemblyman Michael Carroll when he was on last year, I said to state senators, you know, one of the things for me that really sort of leaves a bad taste in my mouth, and listen, I think looking back, I mean, history still, I don't think, has judged Chris Christie yet. I think there's still, you know, much remaining in terms of how to judge his legacy. You know, listen, I haven't always seen eye to eye with Governor Christie. I mean, listen, other than being fellow Cowboys fans, there isn't a lot I really see eye to eye, you know, with Governor Christie, to be honest with you. But one of the things I think he did to the Republican brand in New Jersey, and I had a really big heart-to-heart on this program with NJGOP Chairman Doug Steinhardt, who was very gracious enough to come on this program.
Good guy,
months
Doug's
ago,
a very
really,
good guy.
And Doug is, yeah, he definitely is, and he was very transparent. And again, I'm not saying this because of, you know, I ran for the state assembly 8 years ago up here in the 33rd. That's really hard as a Republican. But I always had this feeling all these years later, you know, Chris Christie did an immense disservice to the Republican brand. And I don't say this because of sour grapes. I just say it because of two things. Number one, it put Kim Guadagno in an impossible position during November 2017. Because I know Kim personally. She's a great lady, very, very dedicated public servant, very bright. I mean, just knows her stuff. And I felt really bad for her because I think Chris did her an immense disservice. I think he really tarnished the GOP brand in New Jersey. And credit Doug Steinhardt. I mean, he's working really hard to try to get enthusiasm up for Republicans. And even to the point of, you know, this November, all 80 assembly seats are up for grabs here in New Jersey. Is there any realistic expectation you think, Kevin, that the GOP in New Jersey can maybe sneak some seats away from the Democrats this November? Or is it still too early in this process of trying to repair the Republican Party in New Jersey?
So you asked a couple questions. So I think, first off, let's talk about Doug Steinhardt. I think Doug's philosophy right now to rebrand our party is working. I think Doug is a tireless leader for the party right now. I saw Doug this morning in Trenton. I saw Doug yesterday in Hackensack. Yesterday morning, you know, so Doug is all over the state each and every day working hard to get Republicans either reelected or elected. And I think he has some real opportunities there with some of the districts right now that are Democrat. I think that our biggest asset right now as Republicans is the administration led by Governor Murphy, who does not and has not learned how to govern yet. And that's been evident all through his 17, 18 months at the helm. And we can talk about that, you know, some of those weaknesses later. But overall, you know, I think that Governor Christie did a lot of good for this state of New Jersey. And yes, just like everyone, he has faults. You know, I don't think there's a perfect individual out there. You know, when
fair.
I would hire employees, I'd ask the question, what is your strengths and what are your weaknesses? If they hedged on the weakness, I said, well, you're not married because, you know, your wife or significant other would be able to answer that question very quickly. You know, so everybody has a weakness. Nobody's perfect. But I think that, you know, in a state that is dominated by Democrats. You know, you got to give kudos to the former governor that he was elected and then reelected in a very blue state. So he did something right going into his second term that allowed Democrats and independents to vote for him, not just Republicans. With respect to Kim, Kim is a friend also. And obviously I supported her when she ran against Governor Murphy. But look, you know, she was in an uphill battle against someone that had an enormous amount of money that he was willing to spend to get elected. When you buy all 21 county chairs, you know, you have the upper hand from day one. So in this case, you know, with that kind of money in a democratically controlled state, you know, Kim had a very hard time. And we saw that last year when we had, you know, a candidate running for U.S. Senate that had money, had a message, but we had, you know, a Democrat that was very, very weak, who had an enormous amount of baggage coming along with him and still was reelected, you know. So it's difficult in this state to get your message out and to be well-received. As I said, you know, Governor Christie, as a former mayor, with the 2% interest arbitration cap and the 2% cap on property taxes, helped our residents in big ways. You know, I chuckle sometimes. You know, I had a meeting with the NJEA, and I'm not going to go down this pathway other than to say that, you know, they're concerned over Chapter 78 and how Governor Christie signed it. I said, but, you know, folks, the problem is the Democrats gave Governor Christie that bill. He couldn't have signed it without their support. And you've been supporting Democrats for all these years. We on the Republican side are willing to sit down and listen to your concerns. You know, we're here to make a difference. I understand that, you know, you're my residents of New Jersey, you're my residents in the district, and I'm more than willing to sit down and look at how I can make your lives better. You know, give us a chance. And so I've opened up conversations with those folks because I'm here to help you, right? And you need to start supporting people that are willing to sit down and listen and help. You know, and I think that's the true testament to any leader, is the willingness to sit down with an open mind, listen, and be willing to help. And, you know, we may not agree on everything, but if I'm not going to agree with you, I'll tell you why. And you know, and I think back to 2009 when Chris and I sat down with an elderly couple that were very concerned about and passionate about the state of affairs of New Jersey and nationally, and said, look, you know, we have these 10 things we want to talk about. What do you think? And we went through the 10 things that morning, and, you know, we agreed on, let's say, 5, and we disagreed on the other 5, and we told them why, and they gave Chris and I our first campaign donation. And if you speak to those two folks now, all these years later, they'll tell you that we've always kept our promise that we would listen. We may not agree with you. We'll tell you why we didn't agree. But the things we can do to help you, we will. And that's the same thing, whether it's the NJEA or other unions or other residents or other issues. I think the difference between Democrats and Republicans, we'll listen to everybody. We'll sit down. We'll have a conversation. We may not agree, but we'll tell you why. And the things we can't agree on, we'll go to the mat with you on and help you.
You know what? I have to tell you, Kevin, you know what? You changed my mind tonight a little bit. You know, I think I really appreciate that perspective you just gave tonight here on the show concerning not just Governor Christie, but I think sort of the outlook for the entire NJGOP. And I'm just about to wrap up with you here. I know you have an event to go to. I know what Ishan Shah had mentioned to me that you have an event to go to, so I appreciate your valuable time here. Before I let you go, you know what, Kevin? I feel like I have you on for 3 hours and not get through everything. Like, that's how much of a wealth of information you are, and I appreciate coming on the program tonight. But before I let you go, two things. Again, I want to thank you for your time. I hope you've enjoyed your experience here on Politically Direct. I hope you tell your friends on social media how much you like Politically Direct, and I'm hoping that you'll want to come back on soon. Right, sir?
Absolutely. Listen, I appreciate the time. I appreciate what you're doing. You know, and as I said, the underlying, you know, reason I'm here is to get our message out that, you know, I'm here to help. And that's the bottom line. You know, I look at, you asked me the question why I ran a long time ago. You know, I ran because my job is to give back and volunteer my time and whatever services and expertise I can afford. I come from a family, as I said, my father-in-law, who passed away in 2004, was heavily involved in the Republican Party. He was a mayor. He was a councilman. He was a state committeeman. He was actually the Bergen County GOP chairman. At one point, my wife is the captain of our local town's ambulance corps. She's an EMT. She's actually at an ambulance corps meeting right now. You know, we come from a family that gives back. We donate our time. We donate our energy because that's what it's all about. It's to leave the place better than when you got there, like I told you earlier. You know, I did a TV show a few years ago where I won some money. And we took that money and donated it to an organization in Patterson for battered women and children so that we could create a better life for folks. Because, you know, you want to leave a footprint on this planet that is in a positive way. You know, you want to be able to say, look, you helped people. And that's what, you know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, I think, you know, when you run for office, your intent is to run to help people. Maybe sometimes, you know, some folks lose their pathway. They get caught up in, you know, the stardom of whatever you're doing, and they forget that. But if you keep focused on that very narrow pathway that you're there to help folks, you can truly make a difference. And that's what I'm doing. You know, I'm running on a pathway to make a difference.
Well, Kevin, you're doing that. Both you and Chris are doing that, not just in the 40th Legislative District, but you're doing it for all New Jerseyans. I do appreciate that. I appreciate your time. Before I let you go, this is the part of the program where I give my guests the floor. So if you want to pick my brain about something, you want to ask the host a question, Mr. Rooney, the floor is yours, sir. What you got for me?
Well, thank you very much. And listen, I appreciate the time spent here tonight. I will ask you this question. You know, why did you pick me?
Well, I'll be very honest. When I had Chris on a few weeks back, again, I do homework on all my legislators in New Jersey. Part of the challenge of this program is to get guests that are interesting, guests that are knowledgeable, and guests that want to come on here and talk about the issues. And I know that when I had Chris on a few weeks ago, you know, I was really intrigued by the good work that both of you have done in your district and what you guys continue to do. And to be honest with you, those are the guests that I look out for. I mean, I haven't really struggled to get guests since I've started this program. You know, working under the Insider NJ umbrella, I think, really helps this program because of the good work and the excellent journalism that Insider NJ brings everybody daily in New Jersey. But again, you know, you're a legislator that caught my eye, just like Chris, and you guys are doing good work. I don't want to jinx you guys, but as far as I'm concerned, you know, for the constituents in the 40th, you know, Chris and Kevin are doing you justice, and they deserve another term. I don't ever like to come on this program and ever take favorites or pick sides or make predictions or give endorsements. But, you know, Chris and Kevin are doing a great job for you guys in the 40th. So they deserve another term. I hope you give it to them this November because they're truly worthy. And, you know, again, I welcome great guests on the show, Kevin. You're no exception. And I look forward to having you back on later on this summer. We could talk about the budget and maybe how pissed off we're still going to be at Governor Murphy. Can we do that?
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, the concern is going to be, you know, whether or not we shut this government down. And I'm hoping we don't because, as I said, it's not fair to the residents of New Jersey. You know, they elected us to do our job. And constitutionally, we have a job to do by June 30th. If we don't, it's not going to be because Republicans failed. Understand, like I said, it's 54-26, 26-14. Democrats don't need us in Trenton. So if folks are out there listening, understand this. If we shut this government down, it's because the Democrats shut it down, just like they did in 2017. You know, as you said, we talk about Governor Christie. I was there in 2017. Governor Christie needed a budget to sign. He couldn't shut the government down constitutionally. We needed a budget to sign. And 26 Democrats in the House, our House, decided they wanted to vote one way, 26 Democrats decided to vote a different way, and they shut the government down. That's the story. You know, I was there in Trenton every day waiting for the Democrats to show up. In fact, there's a picture out there from Saturday, whatever day that was, June 1st, July 1st, something like that, where we sat in Trenton in the State House with not a Democrat in the State House. You know, the Republicans had their sleeves rolled up, ready to work and vote. Democrats didn't show up. And so that's the problem. And so if anything can happen out of this discussion, if you read in the papers, hear on the news, that the state of New Jersey shut down because of a government impasse on the budget, it's a Democrat issue. It's not a Republican issue. 54-26, 26-14. Remember those numbers.
Yep,
they don't
I
need
will.
Us. So if the budget is if the budget doesn't pass, it's because the Democrats chose to shut this government down. And remember that in November, because the Democrats shut the budget down, they hurt the New Jersey residents 4th of July weekend. So all the benefits, all the things that you would enjoy is because the Democrats shut the government down. Their infighting shut the government down. And that's key, because they control all three branches of the government.
Kevin, that's well said. I appreciate your time. In advance, I want to wish you a very happy Father's Day. Keep up the good
work.
You know, stay a patriot like you are, and we'll have you back on during the summer. And please tell everybody you know on social media how much you love Politically Direct. Can you do that, sir?
Absolutely.
All right. Have a great Memorial Day weekend, Kevin. Keep up the good work, and we'll talk to you again soon, brother.
You too, Fernando. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, 905 here on the East Coast. And great conversation today here with the esteemed assemblyman in the 40th Legislative District. Obviously, it was great having both him and Krista Phillips on within the last month, and certainly talking about the budget, talking about New Jersey politics, and what a wealth of information, folks. If you missed any part of tonight's broadcast, folks, you know, check out www.insidernj.com/podcast. You can listen to tonight's episode in its entirety with Kevin Rooney, the assemblyman out of the 40th Legislative District. You can listen to all of my episodes absolutely free of charge. You can download them from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. You can listen to them anywhere, anytime. And now, again, folks, if you have a topic or issue you want to hear about in the coming weeks, please write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I love to get emails. I answer them promptly. So if you have a suggestion, again, for a topic or a guest in the coming weeks and months ahead, I'd love to hear from you. Write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. Also, check me out on Instagram, firstly, at Professor Fernando Uribe. A lot of new likes, a lot of new followers, especially from Politicons. I was really excited to get that with that. So, you know, I'm really, really excited to see them on there on Instagram. Also, folks, hit me up on Twitter, at Professor F. Uribe. Also, go on Facebook and like Politically Direct. Share it on your wall and tell your friends to do the same. And whether it's on your morning commute, folks, getting your daily workout in, walking your dog, doing your laundry or homework, tune in, and you'll be happy that you did. Live every Thursday night at 8 p.m. You can listen to the best analysis and commentary about everything going on in New Jersey. It's always right here on Politically Direct. And also, don't forget to check out Insider NJ, folks, by going to www.insidernj.com. At the very, very top of the page, you can click on the subscribe button, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So when you're having your morning coffee, having a bagel, walking your dog, you're on your phone, scrolling through your inbox, the morning intelligence briefing delivered to you conveniently right there every single morning. The best scoops, the best journalism, again, brought to you daily by Insider NJ. Make sure you like them on Facebook, ladies and gentlemen, and also follow them on Twitter. The best journalism anywhere in the Garden State, look no further than Insider NJ. Folks, we'll see you here next week on Blog Talk Radio. Have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. Please remember why it's so important. Let's honor all of our brave servicemen and servicewomen who gave so much for us to enjoy all the liberties that we enjoy each and every day. Take a moment, thank a veteran this weekend. If you have any loved ones that you've lost, who've served, make sure you honor them this weekend. That's what Memorial Day is all about. But more importantly, folks, please party responsibly. Get to all your destinations safely. Take an Uber or a Lyft or mass transit, whatever. Be the designated driver if you have to. Make sure you're partying safely and responsibly this Memorial Day weekend here in the Garden State. I'll see you next week, folks, here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
Oh, ain't you sick from a-